Seat Book Club, Book 5, Battle Royale by Koshin Takami. This is Scott.
And I'm Sam.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and this is Backseat Book Club.
Yep.
And today we will be discussing Battle Royale by Koshin Takami.
Way to go, you said it right.
Woohoo!
Applause and cookies.
I like cookies.
And if you go to the Goodreads group for the site, which I recommend you do, because not enough people are commenting on it, you can see that there is a poll of about 17 books. Whatever gets a lot of interest, I'm not promising. Whatever gets a lot of interest will make up the next at least 4 books we read.
Unless we decide we really don't like what you chose.
Well, there are a few that may have gotten left behind or switched for a different one from that author as part of the vetting process. And even then, things that were suggested might end up in the next round.
We don't throw away. Let's just say we don't throw away suggestions.
Well, there's a couple like that. I guess I have to add a new rule to the list is, and I don't want to make anyone feel bad, but something that is in print and available in some format, because we had a guy suggest a book that is out of print and mentioned that it's really easy to get copies on Amazon, and it's like, well, there's only 12 on Amazon, and I. You know, that's great for the hosts, but there's like 150 people that are going to listen to this, and they might be in trouble unless they're really good at organizing a sharing program.
And we don't talk about getting things illegally.
Yeah, we don't condone any sort of free EPUB scam that may be out there.
Like copies of Battle Royale.
Which we discovered quite by accident, trying to find an ebook for Lena. There is no ebook version of this, guys, I'm afraid.
No, I had to read it. Listen, that's the actual paper book.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just that. The whole publisher in general doesn't have any books on ebook, because they know how limited their market is.
Well, here's the... because the second print run is being done by Viz.
Viz did the first print run, honey.
Well, Viz has a digital division now.
And they've done nothing.
No, they've put Naruto up. Because that's what Viz does.
I'm just saying, when it comes to the Japanese novels that they're publishing, they've done crap-all.
And crap-all? Really,
crap-all.
Oh, crap-all. Crazy
it's
Canadian.
Really depressing. Just because there's a lot of great books out there. I mean, dude, I have a book called The Summer and My Corpse on my shelf, and it was actually really good.
I like that title.
Yeah, it was like Fireworks, The Summer, and My Corpse.
I like that.
It was a good book. But I'm saying, you're not going to find that on an ebook version.
Also, if you're disappointed in the number of hosts right now or who's hosting, we're going to try and get on all the people who promised to join us 6 months ago to actually show up for one of these episodes.
Yeah,
if you really want someone, like, specific to come back, just tweet at them constantly to do it.
Yeah,
peer pressure, that's how we're going to win.
I thought that perhaps I should be a little nice and not harangue people, but look at what that's getting you. Me and the two Canadians. So, I will return to haranguing and harassing, and I'm really good at that. Yep. And stalking, too, in case anyone needs any side work.
Just saying, we're available. Tony's got a PayPal account. You just leave the money and a note. We'll make things happen.
Oh, yeah. It is one of my favorite pastimes. Okay. Battle Royale. Although it is my job to go over what the book is about, I would not be very good at this.
All right.
It is so in your wheelhouse. I need to defer to the master.
Well, okay, so high level here. We're just going to do high level, because I know Sam will go super granular, because that's what she does.
Is gee, that, thanks.
No, it's a good quality. It's just, sometimes I have a knack for two sentences.
I could just be a jerk and go, yeah, it was like Hunger Games.
Oh.
Please don't.
Well,
please don't do
this to me. No, we have to be that guy and say, I liked Hunger Games better when it was this book.
Exactly. And I liked this book better when it was called The Long Walk.
And I liked that book better when it was called The Most Dangerous Game. And I liked that better when it was...
Lord of the Flies?
No, Most Dangerous Game is actually older.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Hey, at least I knew something else.
There we go.
High level, Scott.
Okay, so high level, it is set in an alternate history where Japan becomes a fascist state and begins a program in which high schools are selected at random.
Junior high schools.
Third year junior high, which corresponds to ninth grade in the mm-hmm. States. So that's why I think of them as high school. Because I always do that little bit of translation. 15-ish year olds. Put them somewhere isolated, give them weapons at random, and force, basically via a series of compulsions, compulsory measures, to kill each other until one remain.
Now, what's the reason behind the program, sweetie?
Oh, no, that's the big reveal. That's the big reveal, and very thematic, So we're just gonna kick it over to Lena, so she can discuss her sort of first thoughts and opinions about the book.
My first thoughts, it much like when I started reading The Stand, which I never finished, when all the students were on the bus at the beginning. Going on what they thought was a field trip, but actually being brought to where they were going to be part of this experiment / sport / program. I was bored out of my skull. I because there's so many of them, and it's
It is a shotgun blast of names.
It is, and it was the same thing with The Stand. It's just page after page after page of a million character introductions, and I go glassy-eyed. But that was only the first chapter. Right after that, they wake up in a classroom, and everything begins. And I was surprised to find that, for the most part, I could follow along with who the students were. It was hard to remember everyone's name. I'm not gonna shy away
from that. There are 42 of them.
Yes. 42 Japanese names. Some of them quite similar.
And it doesn't help that some characters, where they do the thing where if a character's talking about it, they'll use the last name. Mm-hmm. But if the narration will use a first name.
I did see the movie before I read the book. That helped me get through the book. I didn't skip over parts. There were some parts that I kind of remembered, because I read it in a short period of time, admittedly, so I was able to dance over a few little sections, mostly like internal fluff pieces. I really liked the story. It's such an interesting... it's just an interesting circumstance because I don't know if I'm just morbid or weird, but I'm sure everybody does. You think about what would I do? What would I do if I was in that position? If I was one of those students?
Well, and the book does a really good job of putting you in Shuya's shoes. Absolutely. Shuya is you. And one thing I absolutely love about the book and is just the fact that Shuya speaks through memory in a lot of cases. When he encounters somebody who he's watching flailing and trying to murder somebody else, he's always recalling a time where that person was somebody else. It's like, oh, Akamatsu, he was an otaku and he was really nice and he liked to help the female students to make sure that they weren't getting bullied. And now he's trying to kill
another one. And now he's got a crossbow and he shot me. What a dick.
Pretty much. Right? Like, he's really good about giving you that information about who someone once was and now who they've become. And it's kind of like a rush once the game actually starts.
It is. And you develop...
Well, and it's interesting because you have the case where you have... where when Shuya is the perspective character, you'll see his thoughts on everyone, except there's a handful of characters where we'll shift to their point of view and you get their story their way. That sort of play on perspective is kind of interesting and very unique for this.
Like, I found evil... Is it
Mitsuko?
Mitsuko. I don't know where to put the inflection. Evil.
You don't put it anywhere, that's the trick.
That's true. Even though you don't like her character, because she's evil, unless you like evil, I liked reading... They did a few pieces from her perspective, and I liked that. Whereas Kazuo...
Yes.
They didn't really get into him personally very much, that I recall.
There's not much to Kazuo. He's essentially a guy who was lobotomized in utero. So he basically knows murder and winning.
Well, he... The bits that are from his, quote, perspective are still sort of an impersonal third-person narration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's... Like, he's not a person. He's a sociopath. And, you know, throughout the book, he's presented as the Terminator. You know, he just gets up and keeps shooting.
He doesn't want to die. Which, God, when you watch the movie, they pick the perfect actor to be him.
Yes.
Yes. I have a big crush on Masanobu Ando, I'm not going to lie and sugarcoat it. That was the movie that made me fall in love with him, and then I watched other things and was like, oh goodness, you're really good at acting. But there's a lot of really interesting perspectives. One of my favorites was Hiroki Sugimura, that would be the guy with the GPS.
Oh yeah, Sugimura.
I loved his perspective, especially when he talks about his relationship with Chigusa and the girl he's been trying to find the entire time. Kotohiki. Right? He talks about how he has the biggest crush on Kotohiki. Meanwhile, he's well aware that Chigusa has a crush on him. But he doesn't have the heart to kind of tell her that he doesn't love her.
Seriously, I finished this book 50 minutes ago, and you know more names than I do.
I'm cheating.
Okay.
I am not.
Yeah, that's true.
I was mostly referring to Sam because you even said it had been a while since you read the book, even though you've read it a number of times.
Yeah. It's funny, this book has moments where it's like it tries to have some romance elements, and I mean, it's interesting how it's done because it's all in the form of desperation, and yet a lot of these kids can't get over the fact that it's like, there's my high school crush, and I might have to murder them. Gotta love the fact, though, for Hiroki, for an example, or Sugimura, if you want to call him that, you know, when he finally finds Kotohiki, he won't kill her. He knows that in order to survive, he has to, but he won't, because his feelings are just so damn strong for her, and it's no wonder why when Kazuo finds the two of them, it's like, Romeo and Juliet, gonna murder the two of you. And it's just so sad. It really is.
Yeah. Did either of you, you know, well, I'm sure you did, but, you know, just kind of think what kind of person would I be? Would I selectively kill people? Would I just go out and try and win as quickly as I could? Would I hang back as long as possible?
Oh, I know who I would be, and I know that I would probably die immediately. I would be those stupid megaphone girls. And I know it.
I wanted to slap them in the movie. I wanted to slap them in the book.
Well, it's not, I mean, my whole logic is, you know, I'd be the type of person who'd try to find a resolution to make sure that nobody had to die. Because that's just in my nature.
But then everyone dies in 24 hours. Because the other point of the game is, if there is no winner in 24 hours, everybody dies. Everyone is fitted with a metal collar that can be detonated and explode your little head for a number of reasons.
So, I mean, you know, I say it would be those megaphone girls, but I mean, for me, it's just, I know I'd probably be a character that would die in the story just because of the fact that it's in my nature to be that way.
Or you could be class rep doing just fine till what's her face screwed it all up. I'm going to be clever. I'm going to poison the mean boy. No.
Seriously, the windmill girls. Oh.
That was a mass murder right there.
It was, and
that was just a at that point, that was comedy.
And and it was just as funny, and I'm going to throw it back and forth a few times. That scene in the movie was hysterical.
Well, yeah, because the acting was, like, it was overacting.
It was just that stereotypical Japanese schoolgirl shrieking like a banshee monkey while they're all gunning each other down.
Well, and you gotta love the fact that, at least in the movie, like, they try to make it kind of Matrix-y in some of those scenes.
They tried, but it was a slap fight.
Yeah, but that's okay. It's all good.
I think I would want to be one of the early numbers to leave the group, obviously, because, well, each student is let out into the wilderness, or the island in this case, one at a time. And then after the last student is released, I believe within 20 minutes, the school becomes a forbidden zone where your collar will detonate. As horrible as this may sound, and I don't care, I would want to have been one of the first ones out because, frankly, I'd want to pick some people off as quickly as possible.
You're a spawn camper?
Yeah, I don't care.
So you're Akamatsu.
I am not... I'm fine with that. I mean, I wouldn't pick everyone off. I might think about who I think is most dangerous, perhaps, or just didn't like.
And think about it. That's kind of what happens at the beginning. There's a lot of grudges that come out.
Absolutely.
Particularly with Mitsuko. Yes. Like, there's one scene where Mitsuko has it out with, I believe, I'm trying to remember what her name was. It starts with an H.
Hold on, I've got that. I at least have the student list up.
Where? Hirono?
Haruka. Hirono. Yeah, that's right. It's Hirono.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hirono basically is like, well, I don't know what your problem is with me. I don't understand why you hate me. And Mitsuko basically says, it's because you're prettier than me. And she just caps her. Like, she takes her scythe, or her sickle, rather, and just, you know, cranks her in the neck. And and it's just out of petty jealousy.
That is probably the sickest of all the weapons, in my opinion. Everyone is given a weapon of sorts. Of sorts.
Of sorts.
Some of them are fairly useless.
Fork.
Fork.
Hey, let's also not forget boomerang.
Yes, a boomerang, and, you know, from boomerangs to automatic weaponry.
And hand grenades.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey,
but
and fans. Everybody loves, you know, one of those.
Oh, that was the paper fan was only in the movie.
I know, but I always laugh at that.
But I still, even though, you know, obviously you have to be fairly close enough, sickle, still my favorite.
Well, you gotta love Mitsuko, because Mitsuko, especially in that particular scene in the book, she's such a tyrant.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she has no problem bringing out someone's inner fears, just so she can manipulate the situation in her favor. I mean, she does it throughout the story, especially with the geeks. Remember when she meets the geeks and they're in their underwear?
Yes.
She kills both of them because she's cold and lonely and she needs someone to cuddle up with.
She's more dangerous on so many levels than Kazuo.
Well, Kazuo is just crazy. He sees you die, whereas Mitsuko manipulates everything in her favor because she feels like everybody has to pay for how she feels about life.
And she knows what she's doing, and there's thoughts and feelings behind it. Not that Kazuo doesn't know what he's doing, but he has no because of his birth injury, he has no emotion. It doesn't mean anything to him. There's no remorse. There's no joy in killing. There's no remorse in killing. Mitsuko, she's
bad. Malicious.
She is, and it's as much as I didn't like her. It's kind, you know, it's nice. It's a good read.
Well, and I mean, remember, she has a pretty awful backstory. And I don't remember if her backstory's in the book. I know it's in the comic.
Oh, yeah. No, it's super in the book.
Okay, it's super in the book, because it's been a while since I've read it. And, I mean, she punishes everybody for
why
her
can't
past.
Why don't I remember her backstory?
She was nearly molested.
Oh, she was.
Oh, sorry, she was molested. The movie makes it look like it was a near mm-hmm. molestation. Whereas, yeah, in the book it is, she's actually molested. And she wants to punish every single, especially man.
And she pretty much does.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, she's equally mad at her mother. That's why I think when it comes to gender, you know, there's no trade-off. You know, her mother allowed that to happen. So, go figure. There's definitely a lot of memorable characters in this book. Even though... You know, you see the kill counter at the bottom of the pages.
I like that. The end of every chapter.
You always knew who was alive.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
There are two others we haven't discussed yet who are, you know, fairly important to the story, although one, meh. Noriko and Shogo.
Noriko's the load.
Noriko is the princess in the tower.
Like,
who has
I mean,
to be saved.
I've seen people try and make her out to be like the Simon of this.
She's unnecessary, but she serves a purpose of sorts.
She's the love interest.
Yeah, whatever.
She's the love interest of two characters. I mean, she's first of all the love interest for Kunenobu, who dies like in the actual schoolhouse before the game even starts,
mm-hmm.
because Sakamuchi is basically like, oh, I've always had my eye on wanting to get rid of you because you're a little asshole. And he, you know, blows his head off with the collar. And that's kind of how it shows everybody how dangerous this game really is. And it's Kunenobu who basically tells Shuya, you know, if anything should ever happen to me, you have to protect Noriko. Meanwhile, Noriko's had a crush on Shuya the entire time. And has never really had interest in Nobu at all.
And apparently half the girls have had a crush on Shoyu.
Well, can you blame them? He's the little Bruce Springsteen boy. He's not my type, but, you know. Shogo, on the other hand, I love Shogo. Shogo's one of my favorite characters.
If I was to have a crush, it'd be Shogo.
Yeah. Well, and especially the one in the movie. Oh, my God.
He was
gorgeous.
He was.
But, yes, Shogo. Shogo is a very secretive character in the novel. He starts out kind of as just a guy who volunteers to come back.
No, in the novel, he did not volunteer.
He was
a transfer student.
They don't mention that at all.
Okay. See, I'm getting Booby in the book confused now.
Yeah, because in the movie...
He's a volunteer in the movie.
And you're kind of, at least the way I recall, you're kind of led to believe that Shogo and Kazuo both are the evil people you should hate.
Well, even then, you're very suspicious of Shogo for, like, the first half of this.
Yes.
And then you get to trust him. And then you get to that, like, third last chapter, and it's like, shh. What a twist! And then the next chapter, twist again!
He was my favorite. I liked his entire storyline. I liked everything that happened to him.
He's lovable. There is, as much as, like, you're not trusting towards him at the beginning of the novel, there's something about him that you find yourself wanting to trust him. You find yourself kind of going, okay, let's see where this goes. And because he has such a strong interest in Shuya and Noriko, you know that, in a weird way, he kind of has a good heart.
Mm-hmm.
And
although...
He's actually quite sincere in some cases, especially, like, when Noriko gets hurt and he takes care of her.
You know, my thought was, if it does turn out that he is a complete asshole and he is screwing with them, damn, he's good.
Well, and you gotta love the guy who, you know, his first instinct in a game of, you know, in a fight to the death is to make sure he's stocked up on smokes and booze.
And shotgun shells.
Well, they gave him enough shotgun shells.
Yeah.
Yes, but he reminds you because he pets that gun like I don't know how many times.
So Remington, fine English engineering.
He's one of my favorite characters. There's also one other important character we missed, Lena. And that's Shinji.
Shinji gets a B-plot.
Shinji gets a B-plot where he tries to blow the game up from the inside by being a hacker.
I did like that. I enjoyed that a lot.
Well, he gets the comedic sidekick.
Yes, he does. He gets these dorky guys who...
Well, I was going to say more dorky than, you know, little...
You
know,
you got to love Shinji for being a stud, right?
Like, they're like fanboy lemmings.
Well, can you blame them? You have the best basketball player in the school who's kind of gorgeous, who every girl wants to bone, and he wants to bone all of them. But, you know, he's also, believe it or not, a talented hacker. And you learn I think it's his uncle. His uncle was actually in a resistance group to stop, you know, the greater East Asia.
Overthrow the government.
Yeah. Only he was not successful, obviously. But, you know, it gave Shinji a lot of inspiration. It's kind of interesting because Shinji's that character you kind of picture, like, being the ladies' man during the game, like, wanting to protect the women. And it turns out, like, that doesn't happen. I know when I first read the book, that was my impression that he gave me. And then my impression immediately changed as you started to see him building the bomb and building, you know, his master plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that plot because it just keeps, you know, that's the one that's got all the ups and downs. Like,
yeah.
Shogo and Chuya, it's just high tension all the time. And here it's like, Shinji starts out safe. And you think, okay, what's he going to do? How's he going to save the day? And you see him, you know, make attempts. And there's a try-fail cycle that gets really involved. And then explosions.
And at the end, doesn't Sakamochi think that Shogo is the one who was plotting that whole thing out? Didn't he?
He actually blames Shogo for something slightly different, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Yeah.
Shinji, he kind of knew that Shinji was going to fail.
Well, he's got listening devices in the collars, so he's always a step ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, that's the sad part. Because, you know, as the reader, you know it's not going to be good for Shinji. But damn it, he's so sweet and so clever that you do want him to succeed. And it's funny because when he finally figures out that there is a microphone in the collar and when he actually covers it up, you know, he still thinks that he's steps ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Only he hasn't realized that they've all blabbed everything that sort of happened. He goes out like a champ. Let's just put it that way.
He does. He does. He's a good boy. He's a decent boy.
And I guess we should talk about Kenpatsu Sakamochi, now that I've reread it, I finally caught saying his name out loud. It's like, oh, right, it's a pun on a TV drama.
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah, it was Kenpachi Sensei, which was this ridiculously long-running, like, you know, inspirational teacher show that ran in Japan in the 80s. The 70s and 80s, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
It's pure glurge, but it's kind of hilarious.
Now, the one thing, the way the movie took the part at the end, I absolutely hated what they did at the end with the teacher and the remaining students. First of all, in the movie, in the book, he only believes that Shogo won. He believes the other two are dead. In the book, they take kind of a different route, and the teacher becomes this weird, creepy, slash, almost pedophilia type of... I just don't know where they were going with the movie at the end, that part.
Okay, well, for starters, and this is just a weird cultural tidbit, but there's been a lot of complaints filed against male teachers for sexual harassment. And the Noriko plot in the film is kind of just, it's a representation of that. He thinks Noriko is the perfect student. Perfect in the way that she looks, perfect yes. in the way that she acts. So that makes her easy to prey on, right? And because he has such a sexual fetish towards her, that's why you see the murals. That's why he thinks that she should be the survivor, because she's the angelic one. She's the damsel in distress in the tower.
It was so creepy.
He thinks if she could survive, you know, the more the merrier. Because for some reason, he also has this interpretation that she'd be less screwed up than everybody else. Because in a way, Noriko is not exactly the most emotional character. Like, you notice in the story, she spends a lot of time just being a wimp and crying a lot. Yes. Those are the only two functions she has in the story. So any male character that comes in the story can be the prince on the white horse for her. And that's sort of where that lies. In the book, you know, they didn't, I don't think the author really wanted to go with that.
No.
Because you don't really have that creepy interpretation. Like, I mean, you have Sakamochi doing creepy things. I mean, he rapes the orphanage lady.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you know, I think he murders he's just a bureaucrat gone evil.
Yes.
And well, it's very telling.
That's what you get in the book.
Yeah, and it's very telling that when he had a chance to rewrite it for the manga, it's a completely new character.
Yeah, because the manga version of Sakamochi and the novel version are actually even more different.
Oh, really?
For starters, in the manga version,
it's a completely different guy.
Yeah, it's a completely different guy. For example, you actually have scenes with him, his dick actually hanging out, because he basically says he looks directly in the eye at Shuya and Nobu, and he says, yeah, I raped your orphanage lady, so what? Like, and it's just to instill that extra little bit of fear in them,
mm-hmm.
because that's actually what drives Nobu insane in the comic. It's knowing that he did that, and that's where he gets his opportunity to murder Nobu. Right, where Shuya does not respond in the same way. Shuya is trying to keep Nobu back, and he doesn't have the strength to do it. Whereas in the book, you know, the rape is there, but it's not a focal point. It's just sort of there just to show you how powerful Sakamochi is.
Okay.
And it's the same with the teacher. You actually get more gory details.
Powerful and fucked up? Or just powerful?
The gory details in the comic are a lot worse for even the teacher on the school bus.
Oh.
Like, you actually see his brains splattering onto the floor. You see him actually playing with the brains in the comic, which is a little weird.
Yeah, like the. I guess now that we're on the subject, there is a manga version, and it's the original author teamed with an artist, rewriting the whole thing, expanding it out like crazy, and going way nuts on gore. Way nuts.
Oh, yeah. Like, the book is gory, yes. But when you read the actual manga version, the gore is just intensified in a lot of places. The sexual content. And the perversion is also explored a lot more as well. Because, for example, when you get the Mitsuko plotline, for an example, mm-hmm. it's actually introduced as her being a prostitute and a stripper at the beginning. So you not only get her boobs hanging out half the time, but you also see her giving BJs to people.
Okay, then.
Right? And then it goes into how she became the way that she is. Like, there's a whole volume just dedicated to that whole plotline.
Oh.
Because they felt that she was a character, for an example, that needed tons more explanation than some of the others. I think the only other character that gets that same amount of detail, I think, was Shogo.
Yeah, Shogo gets, like...
He gets a whole...
Like, there's a whole volume himself. About the previous game.
Yeah.
And I guess... we've been dancing around it, but I guess now we talk about the purpose of the program. And the prisoner's dilemma.
Do you want to...
The big reveal that we almost forgot to reveal.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
alright, so the big giant reveal of this whole thing is that, in fact, the government runs it. Like, everyone, very early on, a couple of characters mentioned that, you know, basically a bunch of people in the government, you know, watch it like a sport and bet on it. And everyone just kind of, and the readers sort of just buy, the readers led to buy into that. Because even dialogue between Kimpatsu and his cronies is about, you know, how much money they've got riding on, you know, on Shogo or
Kazuo, for the Kazuo. Big two.
Those were the big two with the money on them. And at the end of it, he finally sits down with Shogo and says, "No, we release a list of names of people who died and how they died, and we show a picture of the winner. And it's always a 15-year-old kid who looks absolutely messed up." And you know what that tells the entire populace of Japan? You know what that says? No matter what, you can't trust each other.
Scary.
Like, at the end of the day, you can't unite against us.
Yep. And in fact, most of the kids after the program, you learn, become a part of the society. Mm-hmm. They become super soldiers. Or they become intel. Like, you learn about the previous winner and how, like, she's this little girl with a bunny.
That's from the movie.
I know that's from the movie, but, you know, when you look at the film version, no, that's in the comic, too.
Yeah.
Or it's a little girl in the comic, but doesn't have the bunny. But the bunny's iconic, leave me alone. You see the little girl in the manga version who wins the previous program, and you just see this horrific grin on her face. Like, she's become a part of what they want. And it's a horrific image because you see it, and it just... it makes you feel afraid of what this republic has the power to do.
Now, I don't know if we mentioned specifically, although it's based on what we've talked about, it's should be obvious. Shogo, who we mentioned was in a previous battle, was obviously a winner. Because it's really the only way you get out.
Yeah, and but in order to win, he had to kill the woman of his dreams.
Oh, that's right. I was just going to say, no, he didn't. Yes, he did.
He did. Or, he had no choice.
Or well, was she?
She dies, in quotation. As in she, you know, he supposedly kills her. That's what he tells people that he did. We don't actually know the real reality of that situation.
Like, there's a lot of he said, she said about that last battle.
Or, you know, what exactly... I mean, was there a relationship between him and Keiko?
You don't stick around a corpse for 2 hours without that meaning something.
That's true. Unless you're super creepy, and he's not super creepy.
No. See, that's where, you know, with Shogo, like I said,
he
genuinely cared about her. And of the amount of he said, she said, it does make it a little tricky to pinpoint the actual details. Mm-hmm. So when you get to the ending and he basically sets Shuya and Noriko free, it's because of that reminiscence of that time.
He sees
himself.
Exactly, himself and Keiko and the two of them. And doesn't want that.
Or at least what he wanted from himself and Keiko.
Yeah.
Doesn't want that to have to happen. What had to happen with him.
And so, like, again, I mentioned the prisoner's dilemma, which is this thing in game theory, or an illustrative example within game theory, where you construct a situation where everyone is stuck trying to trust, like you are, it's a game of trust, where you're all isolated, and there's a reward for trust, but a lesser reward for betrayal. And... every, like, in a purely rational sense, everyone should just trust and, you know, not do anything. But there's that always that seed of doubt. Like, it's never, you have to rely on other humans, and then things go crazy.
Well, and that can always be a challenge, right? Because there's always the paranoia.
Yeah, like, this plays on paranoia really well.
Oh, big time.
And, like, you see it in the scene with the girls in the lighthouse, where one person drops dead, and then there's just bullets.
And who was that? Because there was the first couple that very early on commit suicide together.
Yes.
And then there was the second couple that kind of, after a while, found each other. That didn't go so well. And I cannot remember what their names were. Do you know which ones I'm talking about? there was a second couple, although I don't know if they were officially a couple, but they liked each other. And
yeah, there were a couple of close calls where, you know, emotions got hurt and people freaked out, and then knife related violence. But
I think you're referring to Hiroki and Chigusa for that last one, because that's a great example where it's not about paranoia in that relationship. It's actually about acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chigusa has to accept that Hiroki does not love her. And yet at the same time, you know, well, first off, let's just face it. She was almost raped by another student.
Yes.
And she basically, you know, takes an ice pick to his dick and chops it off. But in that moment, all she kept saying is, where's Hiroki? Where's Hiroki? Like, you know, even though she's a strong young girl, you know, it's interesting that she's still playing into this idea that Hiroki should be the one coming to save her. And yet he knows that she don't need nobody to save her. But her death is really sad.
Yes.
Just because she does get to her final moments where she even says to him, it's like, Hiroki, you're so cool. Like, I want to be just like you. I want you to like me back. And he just starts bawling because he knows that he can't. One, she's dying, and two, he just can't accept her feelings. Meanwhile, of course, like, you know, he didn't know she was almost raped, so you could just see the tension there. Nita got what he deserved, so that's all that matters. I said some of the students in this story are actually playing the game. Like, you have some that are doing it to survive, but you have others who are doing it for fun. And when you look at, for example,
like there's the Gao gang that, you know, all go out.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I was thinking more of like Nita and Oda. Nita being the one who almost rapes Chigusa, and Oda, who's the one who attacks Shuya in the forest with the axe,
mm-hmm.
out of being startled. But he's still playing the game because he thinks Shuya is more of a threat.
Yes.
So he figures if he can get Shuya first, why not? Takes out a big piece of game. And it's kind of interesting in the story because Shuya's not really considered, like, he's not the most popular boy at school, but he's definitely well-liked, and yet people view him as some kind of a threat, and yet Shuya himself doesn't understand where that comes from, which I find kind of interesting. Like, it's almost like he's kind of oblivious to how people actually view him.
Well, the whole book is about playing with perspective.
Yeah. But like I said, I always found it kind of interesting that Shuya is just, he's kind of dense about how people think about him.
Hey, I'm like, trying to think of the. Yeah, I was trying to think of the right word to use about how I felt about Shay, and he's rather clueless about so many things.
And yet, he kind of is a perfect protagonist for this book, in his cluelessness. Because again, we can put ourselves in his situation. We can view what he's feeling, and we can either choose to accept that that's the way it should be, or we would sit there and go, you're dumb, stop doing that. I know I had a couple moments where I called Shuya dumb. Like, and I admit to that, because Shuya can be a little bit reckless in his cluelessness. he's putting himself out there.
And the more, you know, the more they were enmeshed with Shogo, and even if you weren't sure if you trusted Shogo yet, you knew he knew what he was talking about as far as gameplay. And when Shuya just kind of wanted to go off and do something different than what Shogo was telling them to do, it was...
Bad sign.
Yeah.
It was always a bad sign, because Shogo would be like, okay, you go do that, but guess what? Something bad's going to happen. Meanwhile, and then Shogo like, I'm going to take care of Noriko. Because you clearly have a plan of what you want to do. Like, you can see that there's frustration between the two characters.
Mm-hmm.
But Shuya, I mean, she is stupid enough in some cases to put himself in the situation. Like, with the megaphone girls. He calls out to them. Which is the dumbest thing you could do.
Duh.
And that's just after he accidentally murders Oda. Right?
Yeah.
So he, in self-defense, attacks Oda. Then he calls out to those girls and basically puts himself in a position where Kazuo could come after him. Easily. And he was kind of looking at him.
Constantly wanting to bring other people into the group.
Not realizing that someone could easily betray you.
Yes. The more people in the group, the more people there are not to trust. Which is why I'd be picking people off at the beginning. Come on.
Well, even Shogo is very sort of detached and cynical about it, where, you know, he hears two gunshots, you know, and it's like, well, that's at least one person you don't have to worry about anymore.
Yeah.
Like, and he even says, well, like, on average, you're only going to have to kill, like, four people to win.
Mm-hmm. I found myself, and, you know, perhaps I need to have my head shrunk, I don't know, but, you know, both in the movie and in the book, I found myself, you know, kind of thinking, I'd like to play like Shogo. I just want to be able to not be unemotional, but to be able to center myself enough that I'm not going to go insane out of fear.
Well, Shogo has the benefit of not knowing anyone.
This is true.
That is his benefit.
Yeah.
Whereas everybody else has personal attachments.
And the fact that he's been through it before.
Exactly. I mean, and even Kazuo, to a small extent, does have some attachment to the characters in this story.
He killed his own classmates. He killed his own, you know, little Yakuza boys on a coin flip.
Pretty much. Which,
but before that, he had something.
But that's what I mean. Like, despite the fact that he's an emotionless twat, you know, he still has attachments. They are people he goes to school with. They are people he has classes with.
And he looks down on all of them.
Oh yeah, he thinks they're all scum. And he knows that if push came to shove, he'd have no problem picking them off one by one, which he gets to do.
Just on a side note, thank you for saying twat.
I love Kazuo. That's an appropriate word.
No. I mean, people in the States don't use that word nearly enough.
I do love how this novel is split into three long parts. I like that it gives you enough of a time frame for each section and what's going on. Especially, I was so sad that, you know, Shinji, for example, dies at the end of the second part.
Well, I think pretty much everyone's dead at the end of the second part. Like, at
except
that point,
except for a crazy girl who sees, you know, whatchamacallit, like,
oh, the girl who thinks she's the girl who thinks she's Sailor Moon.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'm so sad she only gets one chapter. It's a delightful, like, it's the most delightful messed up form of insanity. And you get it, like, you get it in, like, the right at the end of the last section there.
So,
and then,
enjoyable.
You know, Kiriyama just ices her without a second thought. And I'm like, no, no,
like,
she
no,
needs to
I
be in more
see her
of
be
this.
Crazy for longer.
Yep.
Like, she needed to be a warrior of justice from, like, chapter 4 on, man.
Yeah, it was kind of sad. But she was so fun. Like, her chapter was just... it was so cheerful, like morbidly cheerful, that you couldn't help but kind of giggle along as you're reading it. And then Kazuo comes and ices her, and you're like, oh.
Oh, dang.
You couldn't have waited a little bit longer?
But you know what? It just goes to show you, nobody fucks with Kazuo. Sorry, I said the F-bomb, but it's true. I mean, he dies in a car chase.
Yeah, like... You don't expect a car chase from this.
But you get
one. And they got a car chase in here.
On a deserted island with a bunch of half-crazed,
like
15-year-olds.
But the most shocking part of that whole stupid car chase is the person who actually gets Kazuo. Of all the people, it's Noriko. As if this is a sign of an angel killing a devil. And you can tell that's totally what he was doing there.
Yeah.
Which is kind of irritating.
Yeah.
I was not happy with that. I mean, you know, she spends the entire book being a freaking martyr. And this just solidifies that. This whole, you know, she is the perfect person. Because she has to slay the true evil in the novel. And just... that just was the icing on the cake to show how much I hated Noriko as a character, because to me she doesn't even feel like a character. She is sort of a prop mm-hmm. for the entire story. It's like, when she gets hurt, everybody's got to carry her. She has no backbone
yeah.
And it's annoying because you and have characters like prior to that,
the only helpful thing she did was reload a revolver.
Pretty much.
Which, you know, she burned herself on because
she's dumb.
Freaking noob.
But she's such a frustrating character because, you know, when you compare her to Mitsuko or Chigusa, these two really strong female characters who know who they are and they know that they can survive.
Well, even Class Rep Girl and, yeah. You know, all the other Gal Gang members, you know.
Like, there's personality, there's a fight. And yet Noriko cowers in a corner the entire book, and she's the character that gets rewarded.
Yeah,
and that pissed me off.
You know, I thought for a while when I, you know, try and think of alternate endings, if it's the two of them left, Shuya and Noriko, and let's say they think they're safe and something happens and Shuya ends up dying at the very end and she survives and she's, you know, somewhat damaged or what have you, that would have pissed me off royally. But if there had been some freak accident and she died at the end, leaving just Shuya, I'd have been perfectly fine with that.
Well, and that's the truth, though. He doesn't, Takami doesn't really give the reader a good reason to like Noriko. And yet he does parade the novel like she is, you know, Jesus Christ. And that was something that really did bother me with this story, because this character is supposedly really important. Yeah, she has no personality and nothing to show for her poor behavior in the story either. And you call her a love interest, and yet there's nothing to actually love about her other than she's a really cute girl. Which, I know that's how Japanese schoolboys fawn over girls. They don't look for personality. It's just, is the girl cute or not? But it's still not acceptable. Like,
it's true, because whenever they would discuss different girls, it was always what they looked like. And any other describing factor was sometimes, and she's quiet.
Well, remember, they're also 15-year-old boys, so, you know.
Well, and you gotta laugh.
Like, their interaction with girls is kind of like,
well, you know,
the scared hiding on opposite ends of the gym sort of moments.
But you know what? You know, we laugh and say that, but there is one character who I'm pretty sure is like an old man when it comes to girls, and that's like Shugimura. Just because he already knows every reason why he likes Kotohiki. And he's just incredibly sincere about it. It's like, yep, I like her. I like everything about her. I don't think she's actually the cutest, because she's even described as like plain Jane. As a very unattractive girl, a little bit on the chubby side, and yet he's completely smitten with her. Right? And that's why, you know, you feel bad when he finally gets to be reunited with her, and then she croaks. And then he croaks. And yes, I know it was a play on Romeo and Juliet, but it was so sad. That made me more sad than Noriko being in the book. I hate that girl.
It's a
reminder of female characters who are unacceptable in literature.
Understood.
Noriko is very high on my list.
Understood.
All right, so now that we've kind of flogged the women of this book, time for the inevitable comparisons to The Hunger Games. Go!
It's better.
Well, okay. I don't want to say I hate The Hunger Games.
No,
I enjoy. I haven't read the books yet. I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
But I can separate the two.
But here's the thing, is that, you know, I like The Hunger Games, but when I sit down and say, these are the things that are weak about The Hunger Games, it's always something that is ridiculously strong in Battle Royale.
I was just going to say that.
Like, Hunger Games never breaks with Katniss's character, even in Book 3, when it should have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and
here, the play of perspective is, you know, really great, because we get to see, you know, the panic and fear from everyone's angles and this distrust and everything. And in The Hunger Games, you're just stuck with Katniss and all the villain, like, there's a whole cluster of characters that are just there to be shallow villains.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right about the perspective aspect, because we only get Katniss's point of view. Every character in that book feels shallow. I mean, when Rue dies, yes, it's sad.
Because she's the littlest one.
But she doesn't have enough of a personality that you genuinely feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's a little frustrating, because in a dystopia especially, if you're going to do a Bloodsport story, you still have to give enough characterization to make it feel like this issue is real. And that's where...
Or just go crazy and have fun with it, Death Race style.
But this is where The Hunger Games fails. Because you don't 100% feel bad for the situation that these people are in.
Well, half of them volunteered for it.
Pretty much. But I mean, if you compare it to something like The Long Walk, where that's another case of people volunteering to participate in a death walk, you still get enough of a perspective from all the other characters in the story. Even though you only get the one perspective, like Katniss, you still know a little bit of everything about all the other characters.
Well, not
you get just enough.
Just enough. Even if it's just that one kid who, you know, got shot because he slowed down because he wore sneakers.
Or the kid who peed his pants. And that's why he stopped walking. But that's what I mean. You get just enough that you can envision what they look like and how they respond. Whereas I found in The Hunger Games, one of my biggest issues, for example, was the character Kato. Kato is essentially Kazuo, right? There's no comparison. What makes Kazuo a more effective character is the fact that we get more insight into his behavior and his sociopathic ways. Kato is there to just basically say, I'm a hot career boy and I'm going to murder people. That's his character.
Okay.
And that is unacceptable. Like, it's just, he's just a cardboard cutout. An attractive cardboard cutout, yes, but he's a cardboard cutout. And then when you meet other characters in The Hunger Games, you know, especially just the whole careers in general, they're just a really problematic group because they know that they're awesome and therefore they shouldn't have any problems in The Hunger Games. Whereas you don't really have that in Battle Royale. You have groups of people who think that by being a group they could take on other people. But you notice that every single group in the story gets wiped out by one person. Maybe it's just because Kazuo's superhuman. I don't
know. Well, he is the Terminator. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
Like, you can, like, I think I saw someone sit down and recut all of his fight scenes with the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Seriously, they really should cast Masanobu Ando to be the next Terminator.
Oh, God, do it.
That'd be amazing. But, you know what? I appreciate The Hunger Games for what it does as a young adult dystopian story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of upset because the one thing that she does that is unacceptable in a blood sport novel is completely gloss over the gore. To be an effective blood sport novel, you must have blood.
Generally.
And that's where The Hunger Games equally fails. Because she really glosses over, Suzanne Collins, she really glosses over people dying in the story. You know, like when somebody gets a beehive dropped on their head, I'm sorry, I should be seeing insane welts and, like, you know, just popping
and
on the
gibbering
scroll.
Madness.
And just, like, the shaking and everything. And Katniss just says, oh, she started shaking, and then just, you know, goes back to how she's feeling. Like, you know, you need a little bit more to show that this is horrific. Whereas in Battle Royale, you get all the juicy details. You know how horrific something is in the story. I'm sorry, when you get an ice pick to the penis, you know how horrible that is.
And you get that moment where they're,
you get the gory
where, Suki got played so hard, you know, with the water bottle trick.
Yep.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Like, that one I was like, that, like, to me, that's still the kill of the game.
That was...
Because it is so distant, but you feel, like, you see his reaction, and then it cuts away to Kazuo again, and you can almost hear the little pop of the collar going off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, and this book has some awesome kills, like Sickles and all kinds of gunfighter and a huge bombing, but no. Just Suki getting played.
Yeah. There's a lot to love about the way in which murder is portrayed in Battle Royale. Mostly because a lot of the deaths even in the book are pretty creative. Whereas, you know, let's compare it back to The Hunger Games. I think the most creative death in the entire story is the person with the beehive on the head. Because even the people turning into the evil wolf things at the end was kind of predictable.
That was kind of sad. Dumb.
The movie makes that even dumber, which is the worst part. Like, if you watch the film and then you read the book, in the book, at least Katniss, you get the sense of urgency when she sees Rue's head on a mutated wolf. You know, and she sees Rue's big blue eyes, and she's looking and she's going, like, oh my god. Like, yeah. At least you get that intensity in the book, whereas the film just completely removes that. You don't get that emotion because Katniss is not even paying attention to them. She's just like, I'm going to knock Kato over, Peeta's going to be fine, and everything's going to be cool. Which, again, that's more the movie's fault, I would say, than the book. You know, it's nice that you do have, in a sense, like, you get Katniss's emotions, but I would actually rather read Shuya's emotions and his memories, because to me, Shuya comes across so much more personal as a character. And I think that's something that Katniss lacks. Is that personability. Personability. I can't say the word.
Understood.
He's with Shuya, you know, and one of my favorite things about this book is the use of memory. Shuya stays sane in the story because he uses memory as a means to give him sanity. You know, he clings to those memories. He thinks they're precious. You know, every person in the story that he meets, even if he just sees the corpse, he's reminded of something good about that person or something that made them important to him. Mm-hmm. And you got to love him for that. There is something very sincere with Shuya. Yes, he's kind of clueless, and yes, he's kind of reckless, and he can be kind of dumb. But you can't deny the fact that the guy isn't genuine in how he feels about things. And to me, especially in a dystopian story, memory is a really important factor. Because you have to be able to remember the world before.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that a lot of dystopian novels lately, especially with the YA crowd being the way that it is, they're not grasping that concept. Whereas I find...
Well, and I mean, this is the other thing about The Hunger Games, is you never find out why The Hunger Games happen. You don't know about the society. I mean, the third book pays lip service to some exposition, but it took the movie and Donald Sutherland sitting there and saying, no, this is why, to really get that point home.
Yeah.
Like, it took someone else coming in and rewriting it for that to happen. And, you know, this book spends a fair bit of time just explaining life in this, and it and, you know, how it works. And, I mean, it's taken a lot of cues from 1984, but if you're going to steal from the best.
It's not just that. I mean, a good dystopian story has to pay homage to the world before. And in order for it to be an effective story, you have to give a shit about the world before. Which is what most dystopian novels nowadays do not do. You know, they say, oh, a plague happened. Whoop-de-doo. Why did the plague happen? And in a lot of cases, you don't have authors going into detail about what that's all about. And that's really frustrating, you know, especially when you're reading it and you're questioning, well, what's the point? The setting could be really good, but if you don't expand on the setting or the world building, you know, you're just creating something that doesn't feel like it serves a purpose. With Battle Royale, you can definitely see that the setting and the world building that Takami gives you is just enough to make you care about what's going on, that makes you question the motives of the society. And, I mean, you have to remember, and there's something that's kind of key maybe that we didn't mention, but, you know, when Takami says the Republic of Greater East Asia, he's actually playing off of something that Japan did try to do in history. You know, in World War II, they basically were like, you know, we're going to become the leaders of East Asia. We're going to make China and Korea at some point bow to our feet. And actually, this goes even further in history because, you know, they spent many years trying to take over both Korea and China on numerous occasions because they felt that they were the superior race.
Like, and they even mention, like, the great dictator's plans to retake the Republic of the Korean Peninsula.
Yep.
Because at one point, one of them, you know, mentions to the other, have you ever heard of, was it South Korea? The Republic of South Korea?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, this book assumes that North Korea basically ate South
won
Korea.
that war. Like it, there's something about that. There's a break point in 36 and something about America not joining the war. Like that, he never fully elucidate. He's never really fully elucidated on the alt history, but those are the two big points.
Well, and he also states that China is purely totalitarian at one point. He says that they are going to follow in the same way that Japan has become. Again, we don't know if that is actually true. It's just something like it's glanced upon. But one thing I love in this novel, and Scott's right, it does take a lot of cues from 1984, is its use of totalitarianism. While we don't have a Big Brother entity,
We do.
we do and we
He's
don't. I
not as
mean,
present as, say, as
Big Brother.
in, 84, but he's
He's
there.
there, right? You have a leader who creates the program. You have this way of showing parents that this is, if you want to, rebel, this is what's going to happen to your children. And there's that horrific image, I mean, of Sh I believe it's Shuya's, I think I'm going to get this confused with the movie, but there's a male figure in Shuya's life who I think ties himself with a cord and commits suicide. In the
Yeah, no,
movie, it's
that's
his
the movie.
father. Okay, that's the
That's
movie, and
the
it's his
movie.
father, which, because in the book, he's an orphan.
Right, he's just an orphan.
He's just an orphan. So, I
'Cause
mean,
he leaves him
a
some
note.
kind of a message on toilet paper, I believe it was.
But in the film, I mean, I guess the reason I have that scene on my brain is because that's a really good scene that kind of shows you what it means to be under this type of totality. You have this father who's giving up complete and utter hope because he knows that he can't rebel, but at the same time, he can't protect his son either. So he's looking at it, there's no win-win situation here. I said the movie does some things that are really good in terms of adding to the setting, just little things like that. But the book does just as good a job, I think. So.
I liked the I really did like the book. It was
And it's kind of a shame he's never really written another novel.
I actually think it's because he went back to doing journalism.
I'm
Like
sure he
he
took it.
finished the manga and then basically he went back to doing a couple films because he did help with the two films, Battle Royale 1 and 2. And then he did actually go back and do some journalism. He didn't want to, supposedly the rumor is that he didn't want to write another book because he feared that it would never live up to what Battle Royale was. And furthermore, Battle Royale was actually banned for a while in Japan.
And then the manga got banned.
Like, this is a book that has been banned in many countries just for its content, for what kind of a message it sends.
And I think every time anytime there's youth violence, it kind of comes up on the radar again.
And it's something that I think even he as an author is very self-conscious of. And he doesn't really, like, he's an author who, unlike Haruki Murakami, for an example, or Ryu Murakami, does not like being in the spotlight. Especially when it comes to issues related to children in particular. I mean, a lot of people were not happy with the manga adapted version because of the fact that it was excessively gory. It really focused a lot on perversion. A lot of people were very uncomfortable with that. But Takami stood by it. Like, he was telling people that to him it was important to show how horrific this world actually is. And if it makes you uncomfortable, he even said, he goes, then I did my job.
I could totally see that. I understand the
And
purpose of that.
it doesn't hurt that he's running in a seinen monthly magazine that kind of sells itself on blood and tits, so his editor might be nudging him there anyhow.
Pretty much.
And I've been clicking around, and I've just discovered that just recently, Marvel Comics has started to do a sort of homage to this book with the Young Avengers.
Really?
Yes. My money's on X-23 to live. Like, and I mean, this is them very consciously, because I'll like show you the picture, the first cover of it, and you can go, "Oh yeah,
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That couldn't be more...
But not. But funny. But not.
This might be something I have to read later.
Ditto.
All right. We'll see what it's going for on Comixology.
Is it out yet, or is that still a soon-to-be?
The first one would have been released in, like, December, so...
Oh, okay.
At least one volume. The first issue is out. All right, so any other thoughts on this novel before we close out?
I think I'm good.
I was gonna say, for a first reader, my question to you, Lena, is, you know, what was it about the novel that you really enjoyed? Because you said you really liked it. What was the key things that really just sold you on it?
I liked the fact that I was able to get into a lot of the minds of the students because of the way he wrote. Because certain parts, you know, for certain students, you got that bit of a perspective of what they were thinking. The ones who made stupid moves, you understood why they did it. You didn't just read it and go, what a friggin' idiot. You understood what was going on in their minds when they, you know, let's all get together and have a love fest and then no one will lose. Until we all die.
Just hold hands and drink tea and watch each other explode.
I liked being able to get all of the different perspectives. It wasn't the entire story, like with Katniss, it wasn't the entire story from Shuya's point of view. And on the other side of it, there's 40 some odd students. I didn't get a perspective on all of them, which would have been overkill.
Well, I think everyone gets at least, like, no, that's not true, because there's a bunch that do just go out. But you seem to get a piece of each one, even... Yes.
Well, even without having death with Mayumi Tendo when Akamatsu kills her. I think Shuya briefly states, she was a nice girl. I feel kind of bad for her.
Well, and then you also run into, like, her boyfriend, and you get his thoughts on it. So everyone, there's a piece of everyone in this, even without everyone getting their own chapter.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't overkill getting into everyone. It wasn't glossing over. You really got to see an interesting mix of how people thought in this truly life or death situation. And you're also able to say, I could see me doing that. I could, you know, I understand why they were thinking what they were thinking. That kind of makes sense. If I was in that position, I might be feeling the same thing.
Hmm. And Scott, how about you, considering you just reread it?
Well, I just finished a reread and I once again burned through it in a couple of days, like I do. And this one, like, again, there's the perspective that draws me in, and I just think that, you know, you've got a nice mix of plots with really good pacing and good tension throughout. And I think, and I gotta give credit to Takami here, I think he's either got a brilliant editor or has a knack for pacing. And I know there's kind of been a backlash against this from the Hunger Games crowd. And I think if you even remotely were interested in that, you should read this book.
Absolutely.
And definitely. I think, and I would recommend this to anyone. Like, there's a lot of Japanese fiction where I'm like, you know, maybe this isn't your thing. I think this can fly with anyone as long as they aren't especially squeamish.
Well, and that's just it. There's definitely a universal appeal. I think that a lot of the Hunger Games backlash is truly misguided in a lot of cases. As somebody who likes the Hunger Games and as somebody who likes Battle Royale, I am able to separate the two of them as very different things. And I like both of them for completely different reasons. They, you know, both especially, have... Well, I'm somebody who teaches kids who are in the YA group. I consider Hunger Games a better YA choice than I would Battle Royale, even though Battle Royale is technically a YA novel. Like, I would not recommend Battle Royale to a lot of my students because I, first off, they're Chinese Christian conservative.
Oh.
And also because of the fact that a lot of them would not understand a lot of the cultural issue that goes behind this novel. And that's not something that's easy to pick up on right away. For example, the only reason I know so much about it is because it's part of what I studied in university. Right? So for me, Japanese literature is part of my background. So I get where a lot of this is coming from and how the cultural element is important to the story. Because you couldn't do this story with, you know, just white kids.
Totally different story.
Because you wouldn't have the same kind of over-the-top effect. And that's one thing I love about
this. Here's the thing. Last time I heard, and I'm not sure if this is still going, but they are doing this with white kids.
I know. So you told me, and I was very upset.
Like, I don't know if it's still going through, but the CW is doing a TV version of this.
Wait, I was just reading something about that.
Like, like it's still a long ways off, and I'm sure it'll fall out anyhow. Like,
well, there was I want to say it was a Spanish version of the film, and it was done as a TV series. But I don't think it actually lasted more than like 2 or 3 episodes.
Well, I know, and there's another one that I'd be interested in seeing.
The Philippines?
The Filipino one where they do it, where they do it in a high school.
Live action performance.
Live performance. Yep. Audience just wanders around and watches the bit they can catch.
I'm with you.
This is very interesting. Huh. I didn't even hear about that one.
It's fairly recent.
This is definitely one of those Japanese novels that I think a lot of people can read and not have too much trouble with. Like, there are some authors where, you know, as someone who reads a lot of Japanese literature, I would not recommend to most people just due to acquired taste. Especially because Japan likes sci-fi. There's just some where it's like, I can't recommend this person to anyone. Except for Scott, but that's because Scott puts up with my inane babblings about Japanese authors. But for most people, you know, this is not a heavy-handed book in any way. You're not going to find yourself completely confused as to what's going on. It's a very straightforward story. And that's something that, in this day and age of really badly written YA dystopian novels, that we should all be a little bit thankful for. Or sorry, I should say convoluted YA dystopian novels.
I'm kind of still hung up on the fact that there was even a discussion of it becoming a TV show. How?
Well, how it's the CW. They'll try anything.
I mean,
they're letting Supernatural run longer than it needs to.
And they still aren't letting them fight Cthulhu.
Nope. Aww. Emo fates.
All right, so next time around.
Next time around, we'll be reading The Magicians, which is The Magicians #1 by Lev Grossman. Even though part of a series, it is a standalone book, which is one of our very few rules.
Yep. And I really hope we can get Becca back for that, because she hated it.
Did she really?
Oh, yeah.
She hated it.
Then I will make sure to begin harassing her
early. I'm not going to lie. I'm actually nervous to read this one, because
I know nothing about it.
For one, from what I understand, it likes to bag on Narnia.
Well, it's not bagging on Narnia. I think it's sort of like it's this. We'll get to it, but it's not bagging on Narnia, but it is very much like this postmodern sort of semi-ironic take on it with some other things in there.
Let's just put it this way: this book really seems to have a very, you either really love it or you absolutely loathe it. This book sounds like there is no in between.
Well, I think part of what makes me appreciate it is I think it is part of what I hope becomes a bigger thing of post J.K. Rowling fantasy novels.
Okay.
Clearly we need to read The Casual Vacancy as a group.
No. We do not need to read Casual Vacancy. We will read
that?
A good detective novel.
That is J.K. Rowling's novel. And apparently it's absolutely atrocious. And I have it. Because I got it from the library. Because it was on Boomerang. So I'm going to read it. And then cry a little bit.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And since Becca does dislike it so much, I will... damn it, I will make sure she's there.
And I like Paul on it, because I think he's someone who might appreciate the riffing on Harry Potter it does.
So let me check my calendar and get a tentative date here. Technically, this was supposed to be our December, so we should be doing another one in January. That does not give me much time.
Last day of the month we should be recording it, right?
Okay, January 31st. We good with that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank you. Toodles.
Good night.
Good night.
Backseat Book Club is a Backseat production. Visit BackseatProducers.com for more shows. Join the discussion and make suggestions for books on Goodreads.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod.